how would you like to start your story?
Well, seriously or joking? I mean,
either way.
Wow. Are you serious?
No, I'm being serious. We can do anything you want.
Yeah, but it's your story.
Yeah, but it's your story.
So I've got to actually direct and produce and write the script for my own story.
No. Just the first. No, I'll do that bit.
I think that what you're doing is that you're travelling around and you're talking to real people in Australia.
Each week on this podcast, we travel around and we talk to real Australians.
And I suppose you could say, well, sometimes we like to talk to an unreal person or something.
Sometimes we talk to an unreal Australian or something.
And so you could give me this an example as of how unreal I am.
Mary Lunig is unreal.
Why is she unreal?
Why are you unreal?
Well, I assume that I'm unusual. I assume I'm not a normal person, but very sane and a very together person, but, you know, weird. Because I'm an artist and, you know, at high school I did art and we were always the weird kids. You know, you talked about Timothy and, you know, he's into what is skateboards.
Why'd you bring me into this?
She asked about you, right?
You know, there's all different kinds of people. Some people fit in a bit better than others. I'm not hung up about it. I'm not trying to say, oh, I'm very weird. No. Well, I wouldn't have thought of unreal except that your show is called Real.
Welcome to this episode of The Real Thing.
The Real Thing.
The Real Thing.
Nice to have your company. I'm Paul Gough. Let's kick off with this acoustic number.
There's something about Mary.
Lunig!
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 Mary Lunig's not your average artist. In the 80s, she published a few books, and for a lot of people, that's the last they ever heard from her.
So many ants in this wood.
About 12 years ago, she moved to Merton in the Strathbogie Ranges of Victoria.
And you get their nests and they try to escape with their eggs and it's terrible. And you know, I try to make another spot for them. But
it's a place where she continues to draw and also chop wood.
It doesn't work, so I destroy whole civilizations. There you go.
What do you say to people when they say, whatever happened to Mary Lunig?
What happened? Well, nothing happened. I just still continue to do my drawings, right? I've got a whole lot. I'll show you if you like.
Not long ago, Mary reluctantly started a website for her work.
I just wanted not to be known, shut everything down and be left alone. And I had that kind of attitude a little bit.
Oh, this is part of the recluse thing?
The recluse thing, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Mary describes herself as a recluse.
How did you get to know about me?
Get ready to hear me lie.
Come on.
Not that it's hard to tell.
I just found you online.
Online as in Facebook?
Found you on Facebook.
Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
I found her because her brother is the famous cartoonist Michael Lunig. But I didn't want her to know that. When I was going through her work, I noticed they might not get on.
New drawings. This is a drawing of myself, I guess, in a really beautiful outfit. And I've got an enormous gun here. I've got a pencil in my ear and, of course, my devil horns there. And there's Michael there, and I've shot him in the bum.
Mary's drawings are explosive, visceral. You do not forget them. She deals in humour and human flesh.
My celebrity brother, Lunig, Michael Lunig, and I've shot him in the bum, and out this side, of course, is coming the devil's tail and the poo in the shape of dollar signs, and that's probably his intestines in the shape of dollar signs, and there's his penis right there.
Part one, growing up and growing apart.
We were from a very working class suburb, just a regular weatherboard house, and our lives were sort of pretty regular, I suppose. No, that's completely wrong. I don't know if they were regular or not.
Anyway, the suburb was Maidstone, close to Footscray, in the western suburbs of Melbourne.
We lived in between two ammunition factories. And so my mother got me a job at one of those ammunition factories in the basement where they did photographs. And I think like bombs, or photographs of bombs. And I was in there working there, but I didn't last long there because I was just too miserable. So she let me go back to school. And then I eventually got into art school, Paran Tech, and I did my studies.
Art school was a seminal time for Mary. She was inspired to go by her older sister, Margaret. Yes, she's an artist too.
I think it's when I first started to smoke, so that was pretty exciting. Boys, that was pretty exciting. I met Leon at art school.
Mary and Leon were art school sweethearts. Is that a thing? Yeah, let's go with that.
I loved it. It was great fun.
2 years into her course, she had a disagreement with a family member. She doesn't remember who it was or what it was about, but she decided to move out.
And moved into a house that Liam was living in. And then I got pregnant about 2 months later with Joe, my son. So that's it. So that I spent my 20s, instead of taking drugs and travelling like all my friends, I raised my kids. So now I'm taking drugs and travelling. No, I'm not. No, I'm not travelling anyway.
Eventually, she went back to finish her diploma of art. Back in the wider Lunig family, Mary's parents decided to use their life savings to buy a property in Dalesford. Now, Dalesford's a small town about an hour and a half northwest of Melbourne. Mary thinks their plan was an idealistic one.
It was a big house, it was almost like an English country house. And so there was a dream, I guess, you know, that we could move up there and gradually all my siblings could go up there and have kids and it'd be an extended family, it'd work.
And that's what happened for a while. Gradually, family members moved up. Mary was part of it too.
Me and Liam built a mud brick house up the back on a kind of a mullock heap.
Unfortunately, it wasn't all going to plan.
There was always something kind of wrong. In other words, I guess that it wasn't working out perfectly. I don't think there was a generous enough acceptance of other people.
Eventually, Mary stopped talking to her parents.
Look, I think it might have been a few arguments, maybe. They stopped talking to me, and then a sister stopped talking, and then another sister stopped talking to the other sister. You know, everyone sort of stopped talking to everyone at different times. Then we became estranged, and was pretty terrible, and there was nothing that could be done about it. We still stayed there, but even though my parents lived just down the hill, there was no talking. So at the time, I don't know what I was thinking. I think I thought that it would all be fixed up, that we'd eventually talk, and I think I waited for that.
In the meantime, everyone's busy with their lives, raising kids, getting on with life, all within a very short distance from one another.
Then as time passes, I'm just thinking that you just get so used to not communicating with that person or that family member that I think it just became permanent.
7 years later, Mary's mother said she wanted to talk to her.
So I went down to just walk down the hill to her house, and we sat and talked. And that was sort of all right. And then I said, I'll come back the next week, and I did. And then after the third week, old things started to come up again. And I didn't know how to resolve it. I didn't know how to solve it or reassure my mother that how important she was to me, perhaps, or something. You know? Yeah.
You all right?
I am.
Yeah. So is that a sort of regret looking back on it now for you?
It's not a regret, but it is in some ways. I regret it for my children because they lived there and they were little kids. They grew up there. They loved, you know, Jean and Pop, as I used to call them. I don't think so much with me anymore because I think that I feel I understand my mother and father. And I still have a lot of respect for them and I still have a lot of love for them. I feel sorry for them. I feel sorry for that it didn't work out for my mother. They were terrific, hard-working people, you know, who'd had their own problems.
Part 2, Mary's Blood and Guts.
My suitcase cupboard, but the reason why everything's in there is because of fire, and that if we have to leave suddenly, you really should have everything that's valuable in the one spot. Gee, I do a lot of penises, don't I? Oh, look at this here. I refer to my work as drawings, and on my book it says that drawings. If they're referred to as cartoons, then there's sort of an expectation that that it has a meaning. There's a drawing in there actually of a woman in a swastika dress, and it was, I think even someone in the newspaper when it was being reviewed said it was a kind of a something about the fascist nature of housework or something that like this, you know. What it was is I just designed a swastika dress and I just wanted to put it in a picture.
Although sometimes a work doesn't have any particular meaning, a lot of the time it does. A strong theme for her is the working class.
My father was a union delegate for the meatworkers, and so I'd sit at the table every night and listen to him talk about the union, about the bosses, the scabs.
Other favourite topics of Mary's are women, power, and sexism.
What's the word when you're an extreme feminist? A radical feminist, that's radical. What I meant.
When I ask Mary when did she first start drawing, she asks me when did I stop?
Well, I probably put off starting because...
Come on, Mary, we're here now. Why don't you just pick up the pencil?
It's difficult to start.
The inside sleeve on RN.
I usually sit down with the inside sleeve.
Across Australia on RN, you tune to the inside sleeve. I'm Paul Gough, and thanks for sitting down with me, Mary.
That's when I'll do my drawing, the original kind of...
What are you drawing today?
Pencil, and then maybe...
Any decapitations?
The pen. And then the next day I'll use my watercolour paints and I'll paint it in and finish it off or whatever. But, you know, usually listening to the radio.
That looks great.
And, you know, I'll get a sore back or my shoulders get sore because it's a very intense thing and it's very close,
come on,
intimate thing that I've got with my watercolour paper, magnifying lamp in there, watercolour blocks,
come on,
Rashidograph, which I love, and I get real close up.
Get closer, Mary, come on.
Real close up.
Closer.
It's a real relationship, you know. And then I put it in my suitcase and then I'll start another one.
I'm Paul Gough from RN's Inside Sleeve, weekdays from 3, and you're halfway through this episode of The Real Thing. Radio switches off.
I didn't stop trying to get my work published. I did, you know, but there wasn't that interest in my sort of stuff, and that was fine. I guess I don't have a really huge ambition. Maybe I could say that.
Mary refuses to make prints because she thinks they're a ripoff.
Because it's only a copy, as far as I can see. It's just a good copy of a drawing, and I don't think you should charge a lot of money for that.
She'd prefer to give them away.
I was thinking of putting in scans of some drawings, and people can download that scan and make their own giclée prints. You just take it to a place in the city.
One guy got in touch. He wanted to buy something, and Mary said she wouldn't sell him something because she wouldn't know what to charge, but she'd have a look in the suitcase and send him something for free.
So I said that to him, and then he wrote back, and he said, asked me if I like salami. Because, so I'm going to do a salami swap with this man. Isn't that wonderful?
And you're going to give him art and he's going to give you
salami. I'm going to give him a drawing and he's going to give me some salami. Now, I'm wrapped, you know. So the thing is, I'm wondering how do you send salami through the mail?
It blows my mind that Mary Lunig is hidden away in rural Victoria and unless you own a deli or produce cold cuts, there's no chance you're getting an original, let alone a print, of her work. And her stuff is good, better than good. It's confronting. And like all great art, it makes you think. Until she changes her mind about the prints, everything goes in the suitcase.
In a way, it's not the sort of work that a nice woman or a nice lady should do.
The topics you cover and how you cover them.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a lot of blood and guts and stuff like that. So, I mean, decapitations I don't mind doing, especially if it's Rupert Murdoch.
There's a shock value in it.
Well, you know, that's really common to do that sort of stuff, really, but not so much for women, you know. So, in a way, I'm probably trying to encourage young girls out there at state school to draw as much blood and guts as you possibly can. Yeah, pretty strange.
Part 3, The Celebrity Brother.
So what's it like to have a brother who's a celebrity artist? What's that like?
Well, it's fine, and he's been famous for a long time, you know. He's a very clever person, you know. He was great with ideas. He was really humorous. So for all of us, it was wonderful, you know. It's just that he's been famous for too long.
What do you mean?
Well, he should. No, I don't mean that. I can't really talk about Michael that way. He might get really pissed off with me. Not that he already is pissed off with me, but.
Right now, Michael and Mary are estranged.
I think that probably for myself and my siblings, it's something that we've lived with the fact that Lunig, you know, it's, you know, and I'll have a fake name, to, you know, Mary Baker, if anyone asks my name, so because I don't want people to know I'm related to Michael. And it's one of those things. Maybe it's why I'm reclusive. And when I think about it, my sisters in, they all kind of live in houses that are surrounded, covered by trees. And they're sort of, that's interesting.
There's one story that Mary describes as a very Lunig experience. She was giving birth to her first child.
And one of the nurses was just a Michael fan, right? And the whole time I'm trying to give birth to Joe, she's asking me about one of Michael's cartoons and what it all meant. And she's saying it to me, what's that cartoon? When he says, and you know, probably know it, come sit down beside me, I said to myself. And although it never made sense, I held my own hand as a small sign of trust, and together I sat on the fence. And I've always remembered that whole thing. And she goes through this whole fucking poem of Michael's as I'm giving birth to Joe, you know, and there's kind of and she was gorgeous, and she really wanted to know what it meant and how wonderful. Oh, he must be wonderful. And I'm sort of saying, yes, he's great. That was very funny.
What do you think of his style?
I think his cartoons are great.
Okay. They're very different to yours. They're very, very different.
Well, but you could also see a type of humour that we share sometimes, a type of humour, which is probably just our basic working class humour. He sort of can't draw for nuts. He never could draw. But his drawing is, you know, some of the things he draws are quite beautiful, you know, the very simple lines and all that sort of stuff.
Whilst there are similarities in their wit, their styles and approach are almost opposite. Think about one of Michael's where it's a man in a field and he's chasing his floating head with a butterfly net. Then I think of one of Mary's where it's a severed head, which the head is a mop, and there's a woman and she's using the mop to clean up blood on the floor. And the blood's presumably from the head, which has just been cut off. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't understand this thing he's got about gentleness, and because he can be just as brutal as anyone, you know. So maybe that's why he's all gentle in his work, yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm really gentle and I draw decapitated heads, you know. You're not necessarily what you project, are you?
I kept asking Mary about sibling jealousy. Part of the reason for that was because of the recent piece she'd done where she shoots Michael.
I just thought that was really hilarious.
The caption for that drawing was, I finally get the recognition I deserve.
By shooting my brother in the bum.
But as always, interpretation can be very different from an artist's intention. Mary just liked the idea of killing a national treasure and the recognition of being hated for that.
Well, the thing is, I'm not worried about it. You're at 26, you know, I'm 66, right, next month or something. So it doesn't matter so much. Take my word for it. You won't be jealous when you're 66. It is funny. I think my father would think it was, I think both my parents would think it was hilarious, actually.
While there's no jealousy driving Mary, her conscience isn't completely clean.
You know, I mean, I do wonder about this, and sometimes I don't sleep well and I think, oh, shit, what am I doing? Because to me, betrayal, yeah, betraying a family member, it doesn't sit well with me at all.
Are you betraying your family by doing this?
Well, that's what I said. This is, I wonder if I am, and I think about that.
Part 4, The Price of Expression.
Just like her parents, Bernie and Jean, who tried really hard to bring the family together, Mary feels she might have actually done the opposite.
I think I probably tried really hard to not to have any problems. I'm all for offspring going off and getting away from their parents for some reason, for whatever reason, you know. and that's good. But I don't want them to stay away for too long and get too used to not relating to me and Leon, yeah.
And just like her parents, an argument led to both sides not talking.
I thought, okay, that's all right. And but then I started to do, I did a few drawings involving my kids, and they really disliked me for it.
Now Mary's become estranged from her children.
Talk me through this, your latest piece here.
On a recent Sunday, in a private birthing suite at a private maternity hospital, a white male was born. I like that bit. This new family returned home to their inner city converted warehouse. And then the next drawing says, where the maternal grandparents show their appreciation by presenting this kid with a shitload of tax-deductible financial gifting. And what's wrong with that? And they're jumping for joy, and it's just a really pretty picture.
But it's a harsh picture. It's a political comment on privilege and class.
When I did it, I kind of thought, oh, I think this is going to be the saddest drawing I've ever drawn. Terribly sad.
That's because it's a son's family.
It's, you know, a heart pouring out kind of drawing. And look, all I can say is it makes me feel sad. So,
what do you think Joe would think if he saw this?
Well, they're probably pissed off. but you know, I would never do that if I didn't think my kids were okay. And also it's protest. You know, I hope protest doesn't get mixed up with hate, because protest is really important.
Mary says drawing what she calls these nasty pictures is a way for her to cope. She is, after all, an artist. Her whole career has been built on self-expression. It's just now the impact is extra close to home.
But I'm inclined to think, well, that for me to go a little bit public with my personal feelings about estrangement and maybe failure as a mother, I think that in the long run it's artistically, it's a good idea, because, I mean, the worst thing you could be is estranged, you know, from your kids. This is something we should be ashamed of and feel like we've failed, and, you know, you constantly wonder what you've done wrong and all that. So it's just something that I thought about, that I did drawings about, and I think that's important.
Even if the work is at a cost to repairing the relationship, for Mary, the art wins.
No, that's the thing I'm trying to understand, is because you feel better after you do the drawings.
I feel better.
Time's limited and you want them to forgive you. But then this artwork that helps you, mm-hmm, is potentially pushing them away.
It's just the way it is. You know, you can kind of, you can have a tone that's, it's not the end of the song, you know, it's just a kind of a flat line tone going along, and it's not over yet, and it's not, I can't give you any answers to it, and I can't really tell you anything more than that it's something I'm feeling and thinking about. We always got the age, and I still get the age, and look at Michael's drawing of a Saturday morning. and I know that all my estranged family get the age Saturday morning. Maybe that's it. Maybe we're not estranged. Maybe through Michael's cartoon, we kind of somehow linked on Saturday morning. What's he up to now? Not picking on feminists again, is he?
Yep, that was pretty good. I'll see you tomorrow and we'll do it all again. I'm Paul Gough. Bye for now.
Now, you heard us talk about just how hard it is to get hold of a Mary Lunig original, but as a special thing for Real Thing listeners, she's actually made an artwork. You know, it's about the show, it's about us. It's pretty insane, as you'd expect, and it's up for grabs.
That's right, we're giving it away. And if you'd like to be in the draw to win it, all you need to do is send us an email with your postal address. Okay, that's it. Someone will win it, and everyone else gets a sticker. So our email is
realthing@your.abc.net.au. I'm Timothy Nicastro.
I'm Mike Williams.
And that's episode 5 of The Real Thing.
High five.